Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 25, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have two returning guests.
Hey, it's Peter. I'm back.
Hey, this is Greg from St. Louis. I'm back.
And welcome back. It's good. You guys haven't been on the podcast for maybe a month, I'd say. So it's good to have you guys back. I have a little news this week, which is I'm actually breaking my rule of last week, which I was like, oh, there's no news because people are casting and I don't care about who's casting what. And then I came across some casting news, which I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. So I'm actually going to say that real quick. So if you don't want to hear, it's about Chuck. Close your ears if you don't want to hear for real quick. It's not exactly a spoiler. It's basically they just signed Timothy Dalton for Chuck to play opposite Linda Hamilton. So I can't, that's going to be, that sounds like a geek orgasm of some sort to me. So I'm excited.
Yes, the former James Bond.
Except he, of course, is my least favorite James Bond, but that's beside the point.
More than George Lazenby?
Okay, George Lazenby, he had one movie, and it was awful.
Man, he technically counts as James Bond.
In Her Majesty's Secret Service,
that
doesn't count.
Okay. I wasn't sure about him. The movie's all right.
It was totally opposed to everything that is James Bond. That movie was anti-James Bond. Anyway, as we get off that tangent.
And Linda Hamilton, obviously, Sarah Connor.
The thing I love about Chuck is they keep casting all their guest stars are stars of
who
other
else
sci-fi
have
shows.
They had
Bruce Boxleitner plays Awesome's father.
Oh, that's right. Yes, who's I remember
awesome?
That.
Awesome is the guy that's the boyfriend, or actually the husband of the sister. Chuck's sister, and then her boyfriend.
They're like doctors or something like that.
And when they were getting ready for the wedding and everything, Austin brought his parents, and one of his parents, his father was Bruce Boxleitner. I can't remember who his mother was. Somebody famous. And then Chuck's dad was Bakula from Quantum Leap and from Enterprise. Like, every time they bring in a pretty big
guest star. Is this the third season?
It's fourth season coming up.
No, but Bruce Boxleitner.
Bruce Boxleitner's second season and third season.
Right.
But Linda Hamilton is the big deal.
They're gonna give that a shot.
Oh yeah, you got season two, right?
Three.
Whatever
the new one is that just came out.
You got three, but you haven't seen one or two, right?
It's not part of one. I watched about half of one, and I was like, it's okay. Like,
it gets better. I would agree with you that Chuck was take it or leave it in the first season, but then midway through second season, they get an arc, and the arc's really pretty good. And they're continuing that arc in next season. Like the end of second season, like, totally blew my mind. It was straight out of the Matrix. It was fantastic. So anyway, the other piece of news I have is that Spielberg is teaming up with two producers from the Star Trek movie to make a show called Lock and Key, which is basically about a bunch of kids. Well, I don't know how many. When I say a bunch, I think it's a family. And their father gets killed by some crazy student, and the whole family decides in their grieving moves to Main Island. And one of the kids discovers a supernatural door in that on that island. And that's all they said is the kid discovers a supernatural door. They don't say where the door leads or what the door does.
Sounds like Narnia.
And that's what I was like. It sounds suspiciously like that. But with Spielberg and these other...
So it sounds like Haven.
Whatever, man.
I'd throw that in there.
I know, and I'm like, sigh, gasp. But just looking at the talent of the producers that are working on the show, you know, it has to be pretty good. Because the Star Trek producers also work on Fringe. So, that could be pretty cool. So, I'm looking forward to that. Also, in the next week, we're trying to do our Doctor Who roundtable. So the next week is going to be kind of off program, but it should be a nice, lively discussion. Okay, so let's move on to the shows. This week we have a mix-up of shows than we normally talk about because these two guys watched opposite programming than me. So we'll be talking about some new shows, or different shows than normal. But we're still talking about True Blood, which is what I care about. So first up
Before we go to True Blood... I mean, this is kind of True Blood related. I just got the New Entertainment Weekly
You don't have to pull it out. The viewers can't see your copy. I was like, they can't see your copy
of the cover of Entertainment Weekly. They're talking about the sexy beasts, which is like aliens and monsters of, you know, television movies. So they had Eric from True Blood versus whatever the guy who used to be on Lost. He's on Vampire Diaries. Ian Somerhalder. I don't know what his character's name is. He won over Eric in the readers poll. I was like, really? And I gotta say, I don't know if anybody out there watches this, but people are telling me Vampire Diaries is pretty good. Because okay, I saw the pilot and I was like, it's all
there's
right.
There's no
it's
way like, that dude's better than Eric. I'm sorry.
He said it was really close, but he took over Eric, you know?
I don't believe it.
Hey, wait, now, Greg, have you seen Vampire Diaries?
Well, no, I saw the pilot 2 years ago at Comic-Con, and I just...
Yeah, that was just okay. I was like, it's all right.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I figured it was geared toward teenagers, and so they'd probably like it.
Yeah, but
and
I mean,
also it's like who, what you needed to poll the age of the people voting.
Well, that's true. I don't know, but yeah, I gotta say I am curious. It's another show that that's just coming out on DVD, and I'll give it a shot. Like people like it. I'm
well,
curious.
Then you can come back and report to us and let us know if it's any good.
But True Blood, I don't know if your listeners know that. Well, actually, they probably do. You have or haven't read? You've read all the books. I think you have.
Yes, I talk about it every week. So yes,
I
know.
She's read all the books, and I haven't. And this whole season, Greg, I know you've seen some of True Blood, right?
Yes, I've seen all the way up until this current season.
So you know that on the show, something is kind of weird about Suki. Like the fact that she can read minds makes her a little unusual.
Yes, absolutely.
So in the new episode, they revealed what Suki was, and I made a guess like a week or two ago to Libya, and Libya, of course, didn't tell me if I was right or wrong. And in the beginning of the episode, I don't know if we're going to say it.
You can say it.
They say what she is, and I was totally right, and I was so happy. Well, why don't we ruin it? Should we ruin it for Greg? Or?
Greg, close your ears for 5 seconds.
Okay, going on mute. Thank you.
All right, they did the big reveal for Suki was that she was a fairy,
and it was great because she's even like, how lame is that? Yeah,
but I keep telling people it's not so much about what she is, but the consequences of what she is. Because now she's moved into a different realm of actually kind of politics, which she's not aware of yet. But we met Claudine, and Claudine was like, my job is to protect you. Right. And she's kind of like, dude, you haven't protected me from anything so far. But she doesn't know what else is going on, and she doesn't know that Claudine has been protecting her from the other stuff. Like, so basically Suki hasn't seen it. So she doesn't even know what the heck they're talking about. And the other thing that was interesting was that Eric was saying, not Eric, it was actually Bill. Bill said that every supernatural being thinks that she shouldn't exist, that her kind are all dead. Because the vampires wiped them out, remember?
Right.
So, the fact that the vampires have wiped them all out, or at least think they do, but we know that we saw a bunch of them in that dream sequence.
Right.
So, obviously, they're not wiped out. So, they're going to have to protect her from, and they're trying to protect her from other vampires, well, but there's this whole, because they were in this other world, there's this whole other level of things that are going on haven't been exposed to yet.
I was
going to
say, maybe they're not wiped out, but it seems like they're on another plane of existence.
Right, and they are.
As far as the vampires are concerned, that means they really can't get to them. Except for Suki.
Right.
So,
but they can come to this world.
How? Or you can't tell?
Well, in the books, they just show up. Like, literally, they show up whenever they want
to.
So
you're saying it's just like saying they're in Texas, like it's really just another location.
It's not they are in like another world, but that's part of the fairy power is that they can step between the worlds relatively easily.
But that doesn't mean the vampires.
The vampires can't come to their world.
That's what I meant. I'm sorry. I meant the so basically they are safe if they stay in that world. They're safe from the vampires.
Right. When they if they come to our world,
so if Claudine comes to help Suki, she's taking a chance that she could
get killed.
Killed. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But her job, actually, she's been assigned to protect Suki from someone who we haven't met yet. And that's when that's why I was like, learning what she is not so much the point. The point is, what happens next and the politics she gets drawn into and the danger she's actually now in, because she's now in way more danger than she was before.
Can I ask a question just relating to the show in general more than just that? Is that they also made a reveal of what Crystal is?
Yeah, that wasn't that interesting.
That wasn't that interesting. She's basically another... She's another animal type.
She's a were-cat. She's a were-leopard. Were-panther. She's a were-panther.
But one thing I wanted to ask... oh no, I just forgot. I'll come back to it in a second.
That's brilliant.
But overall, the episode in general, I thought was fine. Like, I think you had told me before, because she had seen it before me, you said it was kind of like a setup episode. Right. Except for the big revelation, which is the top of the show.
Right.
Everything else was more like clearly setting things up for something that's going
to
happen next.
Well, we're building up to the finale.
Right. We had two or three episodes?
Yeah, so we're building up to the finale. So this episode was very much about... Well, I mean, where Suki ends up at the end of the episode is pretty big.
That's true. Right. Although, it's a big deal. Basically, at the end of the episode, she has decided to trust Eric.
And then her detriment.
And then Eric puts her in a basement and locks her up. So, of course, we're supposed to be like, oh my god, she's made a mistake. But because... we all like Eric. I'm like, well, clearly it's not as bad as we're thinking. I'm sure Eric has a reason for why he's locking Suki.
Well, we also know, because we've seen the conversation before, that he said he's not going to kill her.
Actually, now I just remember my question.
What?
Okay, so a couple episodes ago, and I know, Greg, I'm sorry, I know you haven't seen it. A couple episodes ago, the king's husband, was murdered by Eric.
Right.
It's Eric Cates the King. The king is obviously enraged, and he knows the moment that his lover is killed. Like, the moment he's killed, the king is like, rawr!
Right.
And maybe I missed this in the last couple of episodes. Does the king know it's Eric who did it? Because I don't remember the king going, I will kill that Eric.
Yeah, he does know.
He does. When did he say it?
He
knows he's been killed, yes, because he can feel his lover die. But I don't remember him going, I'm going to get Eric as soon as possible.
No. Well, first of all, all the freaking guards in the house all saw Eric leave. So it's not a mystery.
Well, that's true.
Who
that's
the heck
true.
Killed him?
I guess my question was, because he knows the moment his lover is killed, is it like he sees it visually?
No.
Eric standing over his dead body?
No.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
No, he just felt him die. But, I mean, he goes back to the house. Eric was here.
Like, right?
I don't think that's a mystery. That's why Eric went running for his life. That was my
big figure.
Right. Okay. Well, that was my big complaint, because I was like, dude, you spent episodes planning this, and this is your plan? It was ridiculous. I mean, he could have done basically...
He really did hurt him, though.
It's not that he didn't hurt him. My thing is, if you're going to plan to murder somebody for several episodes, and we're watching you scheme for several episodes, and then all you do is kill the guy and run, I was like, dude, you could have done that the first episode. The first episode when he decides he's going to kill... He could have done that the first episode, staked him, and ran for his life. Because that's pretty much
that's
all
true.
He did. I mean, I was like, that was a crappy plan. That was my problem. So
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I guess I just thought of it more as like he really hurt him, like emotionally. But
oh, he did.
I see what you're saying. Like, I
yeah,
guess
it's just I just thought he would have like had somebody framed or
right.
had
that's
something
true.
Planned. But yeah,
it leads to one of the I in general. What I like about True Blood usually has to do with the vampires. What I don't like about True Blood usually is stuff like werewolves and shapeshifters. I'm not sure why. I'm not big into the animal people thing. I'm just, it doesn't interest me. But I will say that as much as I like the vampire stuff, I do think that I think it's the Vampire League, the people with all the, they're basically in like, you know, sci-fi
commando
outfits.
Oh, that
it's
was awful.
Pretty cheesy. It's
yeah.
just like, oh, this is ridiculous. Like, I wish they had found a way to make that more interesting, because it's a little silly.
It was very silly.
It just looks too. It looks really cheap, and it's a good-looking show. So it's like when I see that, I'm just like, really? That's what you guys came up with? Like, it looks all right.
It wasn't even all right. It was bad. So, yeah. But so far we've only seen it one episode, and I hope I never see those guys again. Because that really didn't play well on television at all.
What about
Lafayette? You didn't say what you thought about
his... I'm sorry, was that the drug haze one?
Yeah, but, I mean, it reveals some interesting stuff.
Okay.
Well, Jesus, or Jesus, however you want to call him. He's like, yeah, let's go get high. And I was like, really? You're See, the but nerd? I thought that was so weird.
Right, because in the episode before, he seems angry that Lafayette is a drug dealer. He's right. Like, that's it. I'm not going to be with you. And now I was like, well, now you're doing V? Like, what? Yeah, I didn't get that either.
That's a little...
Is that in the book?
No. Well, that... Remember, Lafayette gets killed in the first book.
Right. But the other character could be around. He could... Okay.
No.
But you're right.
So it's weird for him to change his mind so quickly. But it does reveal that Jesus is more than he appears, which is, you know, his grandfather was a Satan worshiper and all that other stuff. And we're not sure, does that mean that he has power? Or is he trying to draw the power out of Lafayette? Like, what the heck is going on there?
Was Lafayette's grandmother?
Yeah.
Voodoo or something? Yeah, there's something I remember. Yeah.
And so they're saying that he has some sort of power.
Right.
But he hasn't unlocked it or whatever. So I was like, why must everyone on this show be supernatural?
Right. This leads to my overall problem with a lot of, not just True Blood, but a lot of television shows where you have characters that usually start off, except for Buffy, which that show starts with her being powerful. Like, that's the show, is that she is the Slayer. But a lot of other shows start with people that are normal, but they're surrounded by supernatural characters. And then somewhere along the line, it is revealed that they're actually powerful too. And you're right. Sometimes my heart sinks a little because I think, as an audience member, what makes them easy to identify with is that we're normal. So it's like, whoa, you know, Suki's just a normal person. Oh, actually, oh, wait, no.
Suki was never normal.
She could read, right, she could read minds from the beginning. But you're right, like, I like that Lafayette is just Lafayette. So I don't know if I need Lafayette to be...
super special.
Another chosen one or something. I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would agree. That usually kind of bugs me, so.
All right, let's move on to Mad Men, which we've never talked about in the podcast. So, why don't you
I'll be brief. I think that Mad Men's now 4 seasons. This is the 4th season of Mad Men, and it's one of my favorite shows, and my wife Julia's. This season's been interesting because it's actually been a lot more for the world of Mad Men. It's a lot more, like, fast-paced. Because, you've seen Mad Men, and I'm not saying I don't think it's a boring show, but Mad Men in general, what I like about it is it's kind of more, like, quietly, slowly paced. This season is very, like, bam, 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 which is kind of weird.
That sounds better to me. The slow pace of the show kind of
made Right, heard me... it for you. Right. But I think this season's been pretty good. It's the biggest thing about Mad Men is, I think, Matthew Weiner, who's the creator of the show, has said that his whole experiment or whatever with the show has been, it's basically about these people that have a 50s mentality in the 60s. And as the 60s goes on and the period, you know, hippies and counterculture changes, by the time you get to the 70s, which I think he said Mad Men, the show, will never actually be in the 70s. The show run only is probably like 62 to, you know, if it's 5 or 6 seasons, to late 60s. And so it's interesting every season how these characters change, how, like, the character that, I don't remember his name, but the guy who played Connor on Angel.
Yeah, I call him
Connor.
Who
I never thought was the best actor in the world. But he's not really Connor. It's like a weird name. So he's on Mad Men. And he starts off on Mad Men as this real, well, basically like Connor, this real schmucky kind of like, I don't like this guy at all. And yet now in the 4th season, part of it might be because he's actually younger than a lot of the other characters like Don Draper. He actually has ended up becoming one of the more progressive and more kind of like liberal-minded characters on the show, which is weird. It doesn't mean, I'm not saying that makes him like awesome cool. He's still kind of a schmuck, but it's just interesting to see how the show takes people, probably maybe part of it is, like I said, generationally, and like how their mindset in a weird way can actually be more something that as an audience member you might identify with more. And I think the show is really good at that. And in the latest episode, there's a little girl on there. Donna's a little girl, Sally, and Sally is getting into all sorts of trouble with her mom, but she's another character that, like, I'm quite surprised at, like, what they want to do further. In fact, in Entertainment Weekly, Entertainment Weekly always does this thing where they go, like, what's out, what's 5 minutes ago, and what's in. What's out was Betty. What was 5 minutes ago was Peggy. What's in? Sally. Because that's a little girl. And I was like, yeah, Sally rocks! Like, but anyways, I don't want to say too much, but I really like it. I think it's great, and it seems like the energy level is a little different, but I'm liking it. And I think other people have said it too, that, like, best season of Mad Men yet. So.
All right. Well, my question to you, could I jump in at season 4?
I think so. I mean, the basic thing is that the beginning of the 4th season is that Don and the main characters have started their own ad agency. And so you basically have the culture clash of, like, Don, who's against his old rivals, because obviously he leaves the firm, but he's also against the young up-and-coming ad guys who are in their 20s, who are just like, this old Don Draper guy. So it actually kind of sandwiches him in the middle. But I think, I mean, that's basically all you need to know. Oh, and he's separated from Betty, who he didn't like. So there you go.
Yeah, I totally, she ruined that show for me.
So that's good. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Let's move on to the closer real quick. This week's episode, they don't exactly resolve the issue of who is going to become new chief, but they added, they came out with a short list, which...
I really felt bad.
I did too.
And actually, yet I thought, basically, is it for chief of police? What is the job?
It's for the chief
it was proposed that Pope was going to be, this is the job he's been grooming for working for his whole life.
Right.
And... in this season, it seems like Raider, right? Was that her name?
Yeah.
From Battlestar. She wanted...
woman.
She wants a woman. She wants a woman. Oh, well, Brennan Lee Johnson is, you know, very successful in Los Angeles police work and everything, so she should be the person. And so at the end of the episode, we find out that Pope isn't even on the short list, but Brenda is. And I gotta say, in that scene, it's basically a phone call, and Brenda starts doing the, like... I didn't even want this job. And I was like,
you are not helping.
I was like, you're just, you know, that's kind of a crappy thing to say. Like, even though she doesn't mean it, it's just like, I think Pope eventually is like, leave. And he's right, man. I was like, dude, come on, man. Like, it's not her fault, obviously. Right. But it's just, yeah, it made stuff.
I understood what she was trying to do. And I was like, you're so not helping this situation at all. So, basically he needed a moment to pull himself together and to grieve for the fact that his career was not going to go where he wanted it to go. Yeah. And her saying, well, I didn't even want the job doesn't help.
Right. Cause I mean, that's like you win $1 million and then you know, I really wanted of course, who wouldn't want $1 million? But I mean, like, you know what I mean? I get something and then you really want it. I'm like, oh, I didn't even want it at all. Like, well, I don't want to hear it. Why would you want to hear that? You know?
Yeah.
Like, so now you don't even appreciate it.
The other thing the other big change was that, the husband, Fritz gets made liaison.
He's also promoted.
Yeah, he gets a promotion. And wow, does Brenda not deal with that very well. Like,
no, but that actually was... You and I have talked about this before. I think that sometimes Fritz, in the beginning of the show... In fact, I don't even know they were going to get married. Because I was like, I don't know how these two are. But actually, this was a pretty good episode of Fritz and his job and Brenda and her job and the clash. That was the thing I liked. I didn't really like the case, but I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was good. And what I'm talking about is basically, he basically gets a promotion, but his promotion somehow becomes about her. He's
because
like...
Because they're figuring that because he's the liaison, it's going to become Brenda, right? I think that's what you're saying.
But that's not how he was thinking about it. He was thinking, hey, I've done a good job. I've been promoted in my job.
Right,
isn't
and I think
great?
She even says, like, oh, yeah, you're qualified. I'm like, what? Like, dude, like, once again, you undermined, you know, his promotion. Like, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, so
like,
she totally... she always has to make everything about his job
about
her.
Yeah.
And I don't even understand how they're together at this point. Because I'm like, this is not the first time. This will not be the last time. And I liked how he took his 5 minutes out. Like, she said something. She said something really selfish and really irritating. And he was just like, I need to put you on hold right now.
Right,
so he literally just took a moment to just breathe.
And then she goes through her candy drawer while he's doing that. But no, all that stuff was good. The actual case was about basically a bunch of snotty rich bank robbers or something like that.
They
were all right, yeah.
Well,
no, one guy seems pretty...
Well, one guy was snotty. Everybody else in the crew was just like regular people. The mastermind, because remember they kept saying, who the heck is the mastermind?
Oh, actually, that was funny. They go to a car rental place, and then the car rental guy is kind of in on it. And she's like, oh, you mean the mastermind is getting away in the clown car? Because he drives away in this... really obvious red Mustang with rental car balloons on it. And she's like, yeah, there goes the mastermind. Like, I thought that was funny.
Well, what was great was they're the freaking idiots that let him walk out and get in the car. Because he's like, oh, you want to talk to Evan? And they're like, oh, we'll go talk to him. And he doesn't exist. And so while they're talking about going to talk to him, he's gone.
Yeah. Oh, and there was another good moment, too, where they get to go where... who I'm talking about, who is the mastermind, the guy in suburbia, and this other guy, like, basically the police pull up, Brenda and the crew pull up, and this other guy just takes off, and Brenda says something like, well, if, you know, when we arrive, if people decide to take off, we should at least run after them. Because they're really not there for him.
Right. They have no idea. Like,
why is this guy running? And then the old guys look at the in-shape Gabriel. He's like, ugh. Something takes off. Oh, that was funny. Like, I mean, that's why I still watch the show.
Right. That was great stuff, because this dude is like watering his lawn in his flip-flops.
Right.
He sees the cop show up, and he takes off running in his flip-flops. First of all, he's like 60 years old in flip-flops trying. And the dog thinks he wants to
play. Well, that's an accident, right? He didn't want the dog to fall. Right. He's just like, no, stop it right now.
Well, the dog is like, oh, you're running. We must be playing a game.
Oh, right, yeah.
So it was, that was all pretty funny. And then Gabriel was like, really? I have to go chase this guy? All right, wait a minute.
But no, overall fun. I mean, I like the show. It's not like its best season, but it's fine. It's watchable, you know, so. I mean, I like the characters.
Well, and of that moment, what I really liked was just the dumbfounded look on their faces when the guy takes off running, and they're like, really? But, yeah, it was, the closer is not necessarily appointment TV anymore for me.
No.
It's gotten to be very, it's comfortable. It's a comfortable show. I like it. It's funny. I like Brenda. Well, other than when I don't like Brenda.
Right. Which is actually interesting that, you know, we've said this before. This has been a decade of having shows about particular people that are geniuses at what they do, but socially awkward.
Right.
House is probably another one.
Right.
And I've been trying to catch up on House with this past season. And I can see, you've always been a bigger fan of House than me, but I can see watching it, same thing, like with The Closer. It's like, well, I like House, I like the characters, sometimes I don't like House. But it's, you know, watchable and I like it. But it's not great, you know,
no,
or whatever.
No.
So, yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that. You know,
All right. The next show up is Rescue... Oh, wait. It's a me show. It's actually Lie to Me. I almost said Rescue Me, Greg. Sorry, one second for you.
Oh, yeah, I'm still holding on.
The only reason I'm going to talk about Lie to Me really quickly is because this season... They basically have gone to, not even just this season. Well, this season it's been more of a focus on Lightman and Foster and where their relationship is going and if it's going anywhere. And, of course, I'm a big fan of that. And Foster's been dating this guy for the last few episodes. And this week's episode, what was really interesting, was her boyfriend literally gets kidnapped while Lightman is following him, because Lightman's like, oh, this guy can't be good for her, so I'm going to follow him around. And it was just like kind of creepy and stalkery. It was kind of weird. Like, he would show up at restaurants he knew they were going to be at just to kind of throw off their dates. I was like, really? All right, fine. But he happened to be following the guy when he got kidnapped, and that's the only reason why they knew he got kidnapped. So that was actually good for him that Lightman was following him, though that was kind of a hard sell to Foster. Yeah, I was following your boyfriend, but, you know, if I hadn't been, no one would have known he had been kidnapped. But what ends up coming out of the episode is Lightman, in his maneuvering of the situation to save her boyfriend, ends up admitting more about how he feels about Foster than I think he really intended. And he tries to kind of play it off like, oh, it's just a joke, or, oh, I'm just lying to maneuver this. But I genuinely think he was telling the truth, and Foster, who happened to be in the room for one of the admissions, kind of looks at him like she kind of thinks maybe he's telling the truth, too. And she's sort of surprised, though I'm not quite sure why she's surprised. And then, of course, the episode ends with Emily, the daughter, making an interesting observation, saying that, you know, Lightman has never trusted anybody because he always assumes that everybody's lying, so he's always checking behind people. If he sees some glint in their eye, like a reflection of the sun sometimes, he might think that somebody he really loves or cares about is lying to him, so then he goes and checks up behind them, which creates a very kind of hostile environment for any kind of relationship because then there's no trust. So his daughter was like, yeah, this is why you're divorced from my mom. And she tells him, this is why you're going to be alone for the rest of your life. And he just is kind of stunned that his daughter would even say something like that to him. And he's kind of thrown back. And then he goes and he looks over at Foster, who's having, you know, breakfast by herself at a different table. And he stands up and he looks, he's staring at her and he's like, no, I'm not alone. And he goes over to Foster and goes and sits with her and they kind of laugh. And that's how the episode ends. And Emily has this big grin on her face. And I think that's kind of where this show is going. You know, it's going in the direction of Foster and Lightman in some sort of fashion. And I like that. Well, because I'm a hopeless romantic when I watch these shows. And the shows usually have a good, you know, good points and bad points. But this show goes back to kind of what Peter was talking about, in that you have your genius guy, you know, running the show, and you like him, you don't like him, but you enjoy the show, you enjoy the characters, and this is a very, very similar type of show. And I've yet to convince Peter to watch it, even though he has season one on Blu-ray.
I watched the pilot. Pilot's okay. Pilot's you admitted the pilot's not, like, great or anything.
No, but...
And actually, Tim Roth, or not...
It is Tim Roth.
Tim Roth, actually not bad. I usually think he's annoying. But actually, he seems well cast.
Tell you in the beginning.
Yes, you did.
And I would like you to finish freaking watching it. One, because I want the freaking Blu-rays. You said you'd sell them to me after you watched them.
Would you rather have me watch that or White Collar? Because I have both of them.
Well, I know, and both of them are good.
Oh, so you like White Collar too?
Yeah, I talk about White Collar every week. And what about that? No one freaking watches, listens to the podcast. You guys participate? You don't listen.
What about the Sons of Anarchy?
I only watched season one of that.
I just got season two.
I could have borrowed it.
But you like that too?
Yeah, but it's different. I mean, I'd say Lie to Me is more House. It's a more House.
Another genius. That's right.
So it's a more House-like show. But I think that they do a better job of diversifying the storylines, because House is like Patient of the Week every week. That story is never different. It's very rare that that's a different story. Lie to Me has different stories every week. Their cases are totally different. Like this week, it was all about Lightman being jealous that Foster had a boyfriend, and he's basically stalking Foster's boyfriend and stumbles across her boyfriend being kidnapped. And so then it became a rescue operation. So then he has to convince these drug dealers that he's on their side to help them figure out the information that they're trying to get from the boyfriend. So it's totally like no one's in a little white room. It's not them doing a case for the FBI or anything like that. It's more let's get Foster's boyfriend out of danger, but kind of not really, because he doesn't like the boyfriend.
Is Lie to Me because it's on Fox, is it a 22-episode show?
Yeah.
So even the first season also?
No, the first season is 13.
Cause so it's the new season is a full roster. Okay,
all right. But I think that White Collar is more of a charming, fun show.
Well, that's USA, which would be like Burn Notice then.
Well, it's
Is it USA Network?
Yes, yeah. It is similar. The production value, I'd say, is similar between Burn Notice and White Collar. But White Collar is more... Well, I would say it's more fun. It's more lighthearted. Like Burn Notice
is pretty funny.
Yeah, but it can have its dark. Yeah, but it can have its dark episodes. Like,
yeah.
I'd say Burn Notice is more like with Bruce Campbell all the time.
Because it's not necessarily bad.
No, it's not. It's just I'm just saying it's a little different. That's all I'm saying. Huh. All right, Greg, you are up with Rescue Me.
Yes, and I don't know who else watches the show.
I've seen first season.
Yeah, this is a show that I got into actually late. It's kind of a guy show, so I can understand why you dropped out. But I think it's a really Dennis Leary, who is the executive producer of the show. You know, when you first hear about that he was going to have his own show, with him being a stand-up comedian, your expectations are lowered instantly. But I think the show is fantastic. The show is really about the family of the Gavins, who are profoundly affected by the events of September 11, 2001. When the world, Tommy Gavin, who's the main character, is a firefighter in New York City, along with his brother, who is actually killed when the World Trade Center towers collapse. And so the story actually talks about the Gavin family, who are a bunch of raving alcoholics, and how they interact with each other and how tragic their lives really are. Tommy Gavin, of course, who's the main character, played by Dennis Leary. His right after 9/11, in addition to dealing with his brother's death, his youngest child actually gets killed in a car accident, or actually gets run over by a car. Mm-hmm. And so that produces a bunch of tensions and problems with his wife and his family, and they go through kind of separations and get back together and separations. And in the meantime, he's kind of consoling his brother's wife, but then that turns into kind of a romantic threesome, if you will.
Yeah, because I remember I was watching it at the point where he was sleeping with his brother's wife, and right. He was trying to get back with his ex-wife, but then I think the ex-wife moves away, right?
Yes. His brother's wife's named Janet, and he ends up having going, I guess, back and forth between them. But really, some of the things that have developed now is that Janet actually had a son, which is Tommy's nephew, who kind of gets caught in wanting to live up to his father's memory, and so ends up becoming a firefighter, but doesn't really know if he wants to be a firefighter or whether he's just doing it because his dad was a firefighter and was killed. And so you have Tommy kind of acting, you know, sort of as his mentor, his mother Janet not really wanting him to do it because she's already lost her husband and doesn't want her child to be in this very dangerous profession. So you have all of that going on with all of those personalities.
And you forgot to say that how many times has Tommy tried to kill himself?
Yes. It's all part of the whole problems with his alcoholism and the family's alcoholism. And his cousin Mickey, who, you know, actually used to be a priest, but he ends up becoming Tommy's sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you see their interaction and how Mickey is trying to help Tommy quit drinking, and Tommy will stop for a while, but, you know, as with a lot of folks who are trying to quit an addiction, he ends up getting pulled back into it when certain situations in his life kind of go to pot.
Well, my question too, he was having hallucinations too, I remember.
Yes, one of the interesting things that they've added to the character that they presented to the character early on was that, I guess, when Tommy drinks himself into a drunken stupor, he can actually see and interact with the ghosts of the people who have died. So he interacts with his dead brother and also with his son on several occasions. So one of the reasons why he also tries to quit drinking is so he can stop seeing the ghosts.
Well, okay, tell me about this season. What's the big deal about this season? Because this is the last season. Where are they going?
This is the last season. Dennis Leary said that he wanted to end the show on or around the 10th anniversary of September 11th. And so next week is going to be the last episode of the series. And you actually see some of all of the conflicts that have been going on for the past several years start to resolve themselves. You see Tommy has finally, after going back and forth, he finally has a reason, as if he shouldn't have had one before, to quit drinking. So he is getting back together with his wife, Janet. He's trying to do the right thing with his kids. One of his kids has also become an alcoholic. And you see that in real life and how alcoholism kind of runs in families. And so he kind of sees that he really needs to be a role model for her, and also for his youngest child now, who he really hasn't been around as a father for because he and Janet have been separated for such a long time. So you start to see that, and you're starting to get a heartwarming feeling that a lot of that family strife is going to be resolved. But then at the same time, there are some other storylines, such as, you know, one of Tommy's good friends who's at the firehouse, Lou, starting to have health problems. He's already had one heart attack, and so we kind of see that he is not doing very well. His doctor's already told him that he needs to quit being a firefighter because he almost can't breathe. He can't get up a flight of stairs. But he's having a hard time not only telling the other guys in the firehouse that he can't be a firefighter anymore, but even telling himself that he can't be a firefighter anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of a way of life. So I get that.
Yeah, exactly. And then also, what seems to be coming to a head is the storyline with Tommy's nephew, named Damien, also Sheila's kid. They've been trying to get him out of being a firefighter, and very recently they almost got him to quit, but he still kind of feels like there's something pulling him to be a firefighter. So we see in the last episode that he grabs his gear and he goes to fight a fire, and unfortunately some debris has fallen through the floor and he's down. So the teasers from next week, they don't look good as far as Damien's character is concerned. So at the same time that we're seeing Tommy kind of resolve a lot of this conflict at home, we're seeing some of the firefighter characters really going down. So it's probably going to be a bittersweet season ending next week. But it's a great show, and I can't wait to see it.
All right, cool. The next show up we have is Burn Notice. And I am going to talk about the finale, maybe not right now. I need to find somebody. I'm going to see if I can find somebody to talk about it a little later. But I wanted to talk about the fact that you...
Well, I'm on season three. Like so three episodes in or something.
What are you thinking? Because I know, you know I like to check in on people that I have browbeaten into watching shows.
You know, Greg, do you watch it too?
Burn Notice, Greg. Do you watch it?
No, I'm sorry. I sure don't.
Yes, I have to beat you too.
Well, you know, I
have this thing about USA, and I know there's some people keep telling me there's great shows on USA, like Burn Notice and what's the Psych.
Yeah.
I just can't bring myself to start watching them. I don't know. TBS for me is kind of a comedy network.
It's not TBS. It's USA.
Oh, USA. I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's USA. And USA. USA's never been a comedy network.
I think. Is that TBS,
though? He said TBS. Yeah, you're getting your networks confused.
Well, sorry about that, yeah.
USA has never been a comedy network. They've almost every show that they have on there is really good. I'd say this season, the only show that I haven't watched is Covert Affairs. Everything else they have on USA, I watch.
Terrible. I saw the pilot.
But why don't you just watch them on DVD, and then you can pretend they're not on USA, and it's fine.
Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah, Burn Notice should be your first show. All right, continue.
Well, it's funny because you're telling me that and I'm about to criticize Burn Notice.
I know what you're going to criticize, but I mean, as the show, when you finished first season, that wasn't your criticism.
No. I think what's interesting is, because you just brought up Covert Affairs, and as we know, in a couple weeks we're going to see Nikita. And like, I guess to me... It's funny because, like, when we were, I don't know if Greg watches, but when we were watching Alias, like, what I liked about Alias was I liked the crew, you know, I liked Jennifer Garner and Lover, but I liked her, I think, more than you did. But I liked the world of, like, SD6 and all their little, you know, crazy, somewhat sci-fi slant of the show. But as the show went on, it started to become apparent that either they didn't really know what they were doing or it was just kind of not a very compelling, like, big story. It just wasn't that interesting. So after the first two seasons of Alias, I kind of feel like the show kind of goes downhill. So when I was watching Burn Notice, as it started, I was kind of like, wow, you know, I mean, Donovan's very funny and Bruce Campbell's great, you know, the narration's good. And I actually started to like...
Fee.
Gabrielle Anwar?
Yeah, Fee.
And I love the Miami locale. But that show, what the big thing about Burn Notice is that the main story of Burn Notice is not really what you're supposed to be paying attention to. Because really, it's not, and you told me that originally, like, if you're watching the show going, who burned him? It's not really that big of a deal. That's, unlike Alias, you really shouldn't be watching on pins and needles to see how it all comes together. It really is kind of a weekly show. It's like, you're just watching, which is fine. What's weird to me, though, is that the end of the second season and the beginning of the third season, from where I am, while I still like the show and it's entertaining, I guess I'm starting to feel like if the main story isn't going to be that big of a deal, which it's not by design, I like the characters, but I do start to feel like the stories of the week seem, I don't know, like, just like lazy or like, you know, just like, Michael Weston runs into a guy on the street who's about to kill himself, and he's about to help him out for the whole episode. It just very feels like, wow, the writers aren't even trying to make it like plausible anymore. It's just like, oh, who cares? We just needed 43 minutes.
No,
to kill.
But I mean,
and I guess that's what's to me. I think that's kind of frustrating.
You're at a slow part right now.
I guess, yeah.
But you got to crunch through that a little bit because.
All right.
One, the thing about third season, I remember I like third season mainly because remember the guy when he jumped out of the helicopter, he was like, I've taken away all your protection. And he's like, what protection? He's like, I've been protecting you. You just
like,
don't know.
What's her name on True Blood?
Right. And so,
but I haven't really seen that.
Right.
So
because
far.
You're only
yeah,
in like
so.
Two episodes of season three.
So I guess I feel like, yeah, I'd rather, cause that does sound interesting.
And it will be, oh, you just right. have to get to those.
Well, it hasn't happened yet. So
you,
like,
if you're only two episodes in, yes, it hasn't happened yet.
But television shows in general, usually your premiere, kind of like that's what you always say about 24. Even if 24 sucks for the season, you know those first 4 hours are pretty awesome.
But that's 24 is a different formula. I think the premiere of season three
was okay. No, something terrible, but I was like, that was all right. Like, right. I didn't hate it.
But I'm just saying, once you, they actually have some good episodes where. He is really, like, there's freaking mercenaries after him. There's all kinds, there's assassins after him. It gets to be kind of crazy. And that's actually all really good. And then they address some of the repetitive nature of it by in season four when they introduce a new character called Jesse. And Jesse introduces this whole new aspect to the show.
So that's four seasons.
Yes, right. Four season. I think the show actually gets a big breath of life in that... Right when you get to the point where you're kind of getting tired of the story of how they're doing it, because you're like, oh, there's only three characters, and oh, I know how this is going to go, and oh, okay, this right. is the same thing. You get to season four, they introduce Jesse Porter. He doesn't know them, he doesn't trust them, yet now he's on the team. And
why is he on the team if he doesn't know them, or does, why would he even hang out with these people then?
Because he gets burned as well. He gets burned... and Michael needs information from him. And so Michael is like...
Is he younger than Michael?
Yeah.
So he's basically the Scrappy-Doo?
No,
the...
he's not Scrappy-Doo. He's not...
He's the added new young...
No, but he's not that like... much younger than Michael. Right. He's like late 20s awesome. To early 30s. What'd you say, Dre?
I said that's awesome.
he's late 20s to early 30s. What he is he's competition for Fee. Because he falls for Fee, and...
But Michael doesn't want Fee.
Yeah, he
well,
does.
I mean, the, yeah, I know. I know he cares about her, but I mean...
Yeah, he kind of does. I mean, there's a difference between being like, oh, I don't want to be with you, but I don't want you to be with somebody else.
Right, of course, right.
So, and plus he's part of the team. So that makes things a little awkward. And he ends up living at Michael's mom's house, so you get more of the mom. And... So it changes the dynamics because by the time you get to the end of season three, or by the time you get to the middle of season three, when Michael comes up with a plan, the whole team just falls in line and they just do what Michael tells them, right? When you introduce Jesse, Jesse's like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? That doesn't make sense. We should do something else. Huh. And so he puts a wrench in everything. And it's not that he's stupid either. I mean, Jesse actually is really smart. And he's basically, they portray him as being pretty much as capable as Michael. He can do hand-to-hand, he can do weapons. He's basically the same kind of guy as Michael is, except that he spent...
Has he had an episode where he gets to narrate? About bombs is...
No, well, actually what's weird is the way they do it is even when they're showing Jesse doing an operation, Michael still narrates.
So that actually would have been kind of nice to let Jesse have a narration.
That's true. And it's actually weird to have Michael narrate for Jesse's operations. It's kind of bizarre because, like, Jesse's breaking into a building and climbing through stuff. And he's like, and remember when, and it's Michael going, remember when you break into a building, you have to do blah, blah, blah. And so that's kind of a little, it throws you off a little bit, but you're like, you're used to Michael narrating. So that's kind of how it goes. But I think Jesse is a fantastic addition to the show, especially what's going on at the midseason the mid-season finale that they just had, everything just went whew. And they actually have managed to make the burn thing big in season four. More, you know how it's like, oh, it's not important, yeah, it's not important. Season four, it becomes important mainly because the dude Uriel from Supernatural, he's the head guy of the organization who may or may not have been responsible for burning Michael.
Oh.
And so the two of them are working together, and there's this whole storyline, which they actually pay pretty good attention to through all of the season, and it all blows up at the end.
Hmm. All right, well, I mean, I trust you, so I'm just kind of like, it's starting to wear a little thin.
But, yeah.
I mean, that's good if it gets its juice back. So
it totally does. It really does. And I think that just crunch through seasons. The seasons aren't that long.
No, they're not.
And just get, you know, there's some really good stuff in season three. Get to the good stuff. And then season four is like a brand new show.
Yeah.
All right. So, Greg, you want to talk about Warehouse 13?
Yeah, Warehouse 13. Libya, I know you... don't like the show yet.
Yet? I watched season one.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I watched all of season one, and then I got to the finale of season one, it ended, and I was like, I'm done. And I deleted it. I deleted the Warehouse 13 channel off my television.
Fine. You can not like House 13, and I will not like Stargate Universe, so we are even.
I don't think it's a competition.
Yes, I raise you your Stargate Universe. Anyway, yeah, Warehouse 13. I like this show. It is sci-fi-ish, fantasy, based in a little bit in world history, which is kind of a nice twist. And it's funny. It's comical. It's it's light. They can have some deep episodes, but most of the time it's very episodic and very light. But then they also have a plot arc kind of running, and so you see these reoccurring characters every now and then, which kind of keeps you, you know, coming back for more. So this past episode was a which happens in a lot of sci-fi, was a swap bodies episode. Pete and Micah, through one of the artifacts that they're trying to recover, accidentally swap bodies, which makes it hilarious because at the same time that this is going on, Pete is kind of romancing the town veterinarian woman, and you know, he's kind of having his, you know, fling with her, and at the same time Micah is going to her 10-year reunion, and she's trying to hit on one of the old crushes that she had when she was in school. And so right as their bodies are switching, you know, Joanne Kelly, who plays Micah, just starts acting like a guy, and Eddie McClintock has to act like a woman because he's acting like Micah, and the whole thing is just a riot.
I have a question. The body swap thing only works when the actors can act, and I've seen those actors. So my question to you is, do you really believe that they are the opposite characters? Do you really buy them?
It is hilarious. Joanne Kelly starts she starts acting like guys. She starts grabbing her own breasts, of course.
Yeah, is she actually just acting like a guy? Doesn't mean she's acting like the other character. Does she really act like him, is my question. Do you believe that she is that guy?
Well, I mean, for the time period that they're swapped, maybe.
My thing is, I've seen those actors, and they're not that good, so I don't believe that they can really pull off the other person. That's my skepticism coming forth.
It was good enough for episodic television. I think the best portrayal of a body swap that I think I've seen was in the movie Face Off.
Yes, that was very good.
That I was just, you know, John Travolta doing Nick Cage was just,
I think Faith did a better job.
But no, I think it was yes, it was. I guess you get more convinced through when they have to have dialogue with each other, you know, after they figure out that they've swapped bodies and then they have dialogue with each other, you get more of a convincing feeling there. In the whole body swap, you get another element where since supposedly Micah is in Pete's body and he's with his girlfriend, she has a heart-to-heart talk with his girlfriend, and at the end of the episode, his girlfriend is saying, no guy has ever talked to me that heartfelt before. And he doesn't even know what he said, of course. It was Micah.
Because she knows what she actually knows what women want. Nice.
Yeah. And then, of course, Pete, of course, in Micah's body, starts acting like a guy. And the weird thing is, she's with this guy that she had a crush on. And by her, you know, sitting there and kind of acting like one of the guys and knowing a lot about sports and that sort of thing, it actually makes him more attracted to her than when she was actually Micah. And so he tries to kiss her, and of course it's supposed to be Pete and Micah's body, and Pete does, and of course, you know, she jumps up and she's like, she goes, dude, what the heck?
Oh, that's not that. That feels very juvenile to me. Sorry.
You know what? That is, juvenile is definitely Pete's character, and Annie McClintock plays that to T.
Yeah, that's why I don't like him. That's part of my issue. But
you would prefer a more serious character?
It's not necessarily serious, but the juvenile, right out of high school guy, the only time that's worked for me is Jack O'Neill. Like, other than that, no. Who's Jack
O'Neill? Well, it does get him into trouble. In a previous episode, he starts screwing around with a bunch of different artifacts and ends up going psychotic. So hopefully he'll learn his lesson. But I'm still into Warehouse 13. I think it's a really funny show. It's really entertaining, and I think you're going to come around. I think you are.
I will say that although I don't know if I finished the pilot for Warehouse 13. I really like that guy because he's been on Frasier. He's clearly he's the guy who there's a guy and a girl, and then they get to Warehouse 13. He's an older guy.
Oh, that's what I thought. I was like, I knew you weren't talking about the main agent. Because I was like,
I don't care about him.
But exactly.
But that older actor, like,
he's good.
So I'm assuming he's fine.
Yeah, I have no problem with him. I have no problem with any of the side characters. My problem is with the main characters. I can't stand them.
Yeah, you mean Saul Rubinek?
Yes, that's his name. Saul Rubinek. Yeah.
He plays Artie. He played a very memorable character in Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, where he kidnapped Lieutenant Commander Data.
Yes, the episode. Hold up, my geekiness is showing. The episode was called "The Most Toys."
Oh my God.
How long has that guy been acting then?
For quite a while.
It's like over 20 years. Like wow, like man.
All right, we're now gonna move on to Eureka. Yeah, Eureka this week was actually pretty good. It was called The X-Files, but not with an X, but an EX. And I was like, oh, funny. Because last week, our two main characters actually got together. They are finally, after four seasons, a couple. And yes. I was jumping up and down and singing from the rooftops.
Oh, my God. I thought you were talking about Psych. So I'm like, that guy in the Dulé Hill got together with that white guy? Maybe I should watch this show. Like, you're talking about where it's like the town of geniuses or something.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's right. Actually hilarious. I love it.
It's like, oh, they got together. Interesting.
Totally different show now. But yeah, on Eureka, Sheriff Carter and Allison finally admitted their feelings. They finally got together, and this week's episode is called The X-Files. And I was like, oh, man, because they showed the preview for last week, and they basically showed both of their exes showing up. And I was like, why have you got to ruin their relationship? They've only been together for 1 week. Not even a full week. They got together at the end of last week's episode, and this week's episode is all about throwing, throwing barriers and stuff. I was like, oh, but I have to say I like what they did.
Yeah, me too.
Basically, what was going on is there's something that happens when some scientific jargon, blah, 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 happens, and everyone starts to hallucinate someone that only they can see, and they're starting to talk to him. What's great is this season, James Callis, who plays Baltar, is a main character this season. And he got added to the cast. And what's hallarious is he starts to hallucinate and see someone. And but see, what was great is
gosh, I did not even put that together. I was not even thinking about that when I was watching the episode.
What's great is he's actually seeing an old army buddy of his, but he doesn't want to tell anybody that. So when they ask him who he's seeing, he goes, "Oh, a real leggy blonde in a red dress." And I was like, yeah. "No!"
That's pretty funny.
I totally did not put that together. Now I gotta go watch it again.
That was the funniest moment of the episode for me, because I just fell out laughing. I was like, "Nice," but I mean, it was a funny episode, as they always are, and you know, they solve the problem by blah 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 and putting together with blah blah blah, and you don't really worry about that with Eureka. But Baltar, his name's not Baltar, his name is Trevor Grant. He actually got put in a really compromising position where there's this outside group, which they've introduced before as trying to sabotage the town of Eureka. They're like, but they haven't been on the show since I think season one or two. But now they're back because they realize that they can use Trevor Grant and they can manipulate him and get him to sabotage stuff from the inside because they trust him, which is what he did this week. But then he realizes he kind of got played. I'm not sure how they're going to convince him to keep trusting them, but it looks like they're going to try. But the good stuff was everyone was hallucinating someone that they had unresolved issues with, or some unresolved issue they had was manifesting itself as whoever they were hallucinating. And so because Carter and Allison got together, Allison was hallucinating her best friend who used to date Carter. So she felt guilty that, oh, I'm dating my best friend's ex-boyfriend. So she had some guilt associated with that. So that was who she was hallucinating. And Carter was hallucinating Allison's ex-fiancé because he's always had an inferiority complex with the ex-fiancé. Crossover kind of plug was that's the guy who was in season two. Stark was in season two of True Blood. He played a vampire who was at the hotel. He had the big cowboy hat. He was the guy with the full beard cowboy hat who was all about let's kill the humans. Because remember, it was the church.
Right,
they were all in the hotel hanging out, and he's like, let's kill all the humans. So what was great about this episode is when he shows up, and Carter's like, you're dead. I mean, you're undead. And he looks in the mirror and he goes, nope, not a vampire. And I was like, nice. So they had a couple of really good references. And I give them kudos for that.
This is USA?
No, Sci-Fi Channel.
Is Psych USA?
Yes.
Okay, so I don't know why I keep confusing those two.
They're not alike at all.
I don't know why, yeah.
So, yeah, this week's, so the big deal was everybody was trying to resolve their issues, and the most heartbreaking thing was Joe confusing her vision, Zane, with the real Zane, because her visions was manifesting itself as a person who really existed there, and so she would run into the real guy, and she was hallucinating a guy, and she could never know which one was which. So, except Greg, you said there was a way?
Yeah, I thought that one of the characters had a blue shirt with dots on it, and the other character did not.
They were both wearing blue shirts. And
yes,
it
was wearing blue shirts, but different blue shirts.
I have to go back and look, but I can see you not noticing which one was wearing the what blue shirt, because half the time she didn't know until about halfway through the episode that she was hallucinating him at all. So she thought she was having real conversations with the real guy.
Yeah, I knew something was wrong when he started, you know, coming on to her and saying that he was going to break up with Zoe.
Him with Zoe, creepy. But at least I know now that the only reason that he's at least pretending to date Zoe is because he wants Carter to be upset. Like, that actually makes a little sense, as long as he doesn't actually have sex with her, because ew.
Wait, what?
Zoe...
No, that's what the... Isn't that what the hallucination Zane said?
Well, the hallucination Zane said, I'm going to break up with her. He didn't say, the real Zane was talking to Fargo. And he said the only reason he was dating Zoe was to make Carter upset.
Yes, okay,
because Zoe is Carter's daughter, and she's just like a freshman in college, and she was just like, we've seen her since she was like 14 on the show, and so now she's a freshman in college, and she's like 18 years old, and Zane is one of the he's like late 20s, early 30s, and he used to date Joe in the alternate timeline, so he's. Obviously, he's like in the adult category,
right.
And Zoe's still kind of. I know technically she's in between child and adult, but she's not close enough to the adult side that it's cool that Zane is dating her. It's still creepy, even though in real life, if a 19-year-old was dating an upper 20-year-old, you wouldn't think that much of it. But because we've seen her as a kid, it's weird. It's a little weird. So, especially because Joe used to date him. But the awkward moment I'm getting to is her resolution is that she realizes that she's been idolizing her relationship with Zane in her head versus what it really was. And so she's like, you know what? I'm just going to let that go, and I'm letting you go. Because she thinks that – because the whole thing is the way you make the hallucinations go away is you resolve your issues, and then it disappears. But she mistakes the real Zane – for her hallucination Zane. So when she does her whole resolution thing where she gets everything out on the table, she's like, I don't think we were as good a couple as I imagined, and I'm just going to let go of us, and you can have this back. But the real Zane is from an alternate timeline, so he's never dated her, so he doesn't know what the heck she's talking about. And so then she hands him back the engagement ring, and he's looking at the ring, and he goes, how'd you get my grandmother's wedding ring? And she's like, and then he gets carried away, and they don't get to have the rest of that conversation. So I'm figuring a very awkward conversation for next week's episode. But, oh, and then, of course, I got what I wanted, which was Carter and Allison. They basically sat together and resolved their insecurity issues about their relationship. And then they went and had sex. So I was like, yes, I'm happy. I'm sure they're gonna throw all kinds of crazy stuff at us and mess stuff up, but at least they've been together for a whole episode.
Well, yeah, at the end of the episode, we find that the reason why they manipulated Trevor Grant was to get the power source because they created another bridge device.
Oh, you think they're gonna reset time back to the original timeline?
Well, we do see scenes for next week. That there is some sort of time thing going on.
That's true. It's very Back to the Future.
And Fargo is naked again.
Well, I mean, it's very Back to the Future because they're basically running into themselves as they were the last time they were in 47. So they're having to dodge themselves in their own movements. But then the question is, what did they screw up in 47 that messed up the timeline? Do you think it was bringing Trevor Grant to the future? I mean, obviously, that had some effect.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of.
But, I mean, even if that had some effect, how did it fix Kevin? Like, Kevin all of a sudden has no autism, and everybody else's life is a little bit different. And Trevor Grant had that big of an effect?
Well, you know, it's the butterfly effect.
Yeah, all right. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I actually like this universe because I like Henry's wife.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, that's totally going to suck. Because if they go back to the real timeline, she's there, but she has just met him. So he's already fallen in love with her.
Yep.
Oh, they're totally going to do that. That's going to suck. That is, I'm just thinking about that. That's like he's...
Or worse yet, what if they get into a situation where they get to choose whether or not to fix the timeline? And now they've been able to make, you know, Carter and Allison have finally gotten together. Allison is finally able to relate to her son. I want to call him Joe, but that's his actor's name.
Henry.
Henry, yeah. Henry, you know, has gotten together with, you know, his wife, and really, it's almost like Jill is the only one who really hasn't resolved her issues. But you never know, now that Zane kind of gets an idea of how she feels about him, maybe that's going to change something. And what if they have a choice whether or not they can go back and fix it?
I personally, at this point, I like this universe better at the moment. I really do. I actually vote for not going back to the original universe. I mean, I think that Allison made a better head of GD. She was way more competent than Fargo. But Fargo's funny as the head of GD. I kind of like it. Yeah. And going back to Joe being just a deputy when she was head of security, that's like a demotion. I don't know. I like it the way it is. Anyway.
Yeah, what about the temporal prime directives?
What are you talking? Oh, about them all being killed, that they reveal that they're from a different timeline. Yeah, they kind of suck at keeping that secret.
That's towards Star Trek too.
Yeah, well, that, and they suck at keeping that a secret. So anyway, I think that's about all the time we have for this podcast. If you next week, like I said, we're gonna head back to, we're gonna do a big round table for Doctor Who. We never actually finished talking about the last three episodes of the season. And so we're going to talk about the last couple of episodes, the finale especially, and then we're going to talk about...
Why Amy Pond rules.
We're going to talk about season 5 of Doctor Who as a whole, whether we think that the reboot is working, if how people feel about the new Doctor, how people feel about the new companions, and where Doctor Who, we think Doctor Who should go in the future. And we'll take positive and negative opinions. That's why it's called a round table.
Okay.
All right. You guys have any last comments, thoughts? Anybody? All right. Well.
No. Last comments, thoughts are, can't wait for the fall to get to some more shows.
Yeah, can't wait. I'm looking forward to new shows, pilots and stuff.
Well, giving me something new to talk about. I'm happy.
I hope Makita's not bad. I hope Makita's good.
I'm waiting. My big thing, I'm waiting for the event. That's my show.
Oh, yeah. I want to see that too. Yes. I want to see that.
So, if you guys have any thoughts, questions, comments, please send all feedback to tvcampfire@gmail.com. And I'll talk to you guys next week.
Later.